The Extra Pack of Peanuts Travel Podcast, Episode 50. Yep, we've hit the big 5-0. The Titanic was built and launched from Belfast, the capital city of Northern Ireland. Anyone know how that turned out?
1, 2, 3. I'll show you Paris in the morning. I'll show you London afternoon. If you feel your Dublin heart is burning, yeah, well, you don't have to worry, 'cause we're going there soon. No, you don't have to worry, 'cause we're going there soon.
Hey, everyone, and welcome back to another edition of the Extra Pack of Peanuts Travel Podcast. I'm your host, Travis Sherry, and I want to thank you for taking the time to hang out with us today and also for making us the number one rated travel podcast on iTunes. Woohoo! There are literally hundreds of podcasts popping up each week, and I know you have tons of options to listen to, so your support is greatly appreciated. Today, I've got a fantastic interview for you with Leon McCarron, an adventurer from Northern Ireland who has just published his first book, The Road Headed West, which I can't put down. It's absolutely fantastic, and it's one of the best travel books I've read in a long time. During the interview, we talk about what it means to be an adventurer and some of the epic trips that Leon has taken. But what I really love is how open and honest Leon is about his struggles during his adventures, and also the fact that he is just a regular guy and that really anyone can start taking their own adventures right now if they want to. What's really neat too is that Leon has done adventures with two other former Extra Pack of Peanuts podcast guests, Tom Allen, who we had on episode 15, and Alistair Humphreys, who we just had on episode 43. And he'll talk about the benefits of both solo travel versus traveling with a partner. Leon's not even 30 years old yet, and his desire to push his limits and keep striving for adventures, both big and small, is really, really inspiring. Before we get to the interview, if you've got just 1 minute and you want to help this show get in the hands of even more people, I'd love if you left us a rating on iTunes. This is really the best way to help even more people get inspired to travel and learn how to travel more while spending less. If you don't know how to leave a rating on iTunes, you can go to extrapackofpeanuts.com/pods, P-O-D-S, and there's a great little short video tutorial which will explain exactly how to leave a rating on iTunes. Once again, thanks for the support, guys, and let's get on to this interview with Leon. Hello, travel nerds, and welcome to the Extra Pack of Peanuts Travel Podcast, the show that teaches you how to travel more while spending less. I'm Trav, the creator of Extra Pack of Peanuts, and with me today is the other half of a duo who pulled a homemade steel cart with over 600 pounds of supplies through a desert. We had his traveling companion, Alistair Humphreys, on episode 43, and a man who has also walked the entire length of China, Leon McCarron of leonmccarron.com, and author of the brand new book just published 2 weeks ago, The Road Headed West. Leon, thanks so much for coming on the show and welcome.
Hey, thank you. Yeah, it's a pleasure to chat with you, Trav.
Leon, I asked Alistair the question a few months ago, and I want to start you off with the same one. How the heck do you respond when people ask you, so what do you do?
I'd like to say that I'm an adventurer, but I'm never really brave enough. So I normally mumble something about writing or making films and then try and slope away as quickly as I can.
All right, so we'll give you the title adventurer. So now it's on the podcast. Now you have to be brave enough. Everyone knows you're an adventurer now. A pretty cool title. Can you give us a little bit of background of how you became an adventurer?
I started going on adventures, which I think is a key prerequisite to being an adventurer. But I did that before I ever thought of it as a career or anything like that. It was just something that I really wanted to do. And it mostly started when I finished university. I graduated and I went straight into a job. I sort of saw the way that my life was headed, and it wasn't terrible at all. I was in a quite nice job and everything was quite comfortable. But I suddenly started to realize that I had all these dreams and ambitions and all these challenges I wanted to do. And I felt like I needed something to really test myself. And I didn't want to go straight into a normal career path that I thought wouldn't really fulfill me. So I started planning my first big adventure, saved up for about a year, and then sold everything I had, bought a bicycle, and set off across America, hoping to cycle from east to west, and then really hoping to cycle around the world, or at least as far as my savings would take me. And everything just fed on from that, I guess.
And so The Road Headed West, the book you just published, is about your trip across America by bicycle. So your first big adventure.
Yeah, exactly. And when I went off on that trip, I took a video camera with me and I took a stills camera and I took a few notepads to write down my thoughts. But it was all really just for me. It was to hone my skills at those things and just indulge a little bit in playing around with being creative. I had no notion that I would ever turn it into a book or anything like that. I just did it because I wanted to do it, you know, and I felt it would be a great formative experience for me. I really thought I needed something like that to go out and pit myself against the world. There was quite a lot of young anger in that trip. I was 21 and I just thought I need to get out there and see what the world's like and what it has to offer. But it's been a few years now since that trip, and what's happened and the transformation I went through and the things that happened to me and around me, there were just so many great stories, and I had such a great time experiencing them and then sharing them on my blog and everything else. And it just seemed I had this real desire to write a book and share it with a wider audience. And that's eventually where the book came from.
Yeah. And so for you, that was your first big adventure. And we've kind of touched on a few. I just mentioned, you know, a few in the intro. But could you give people an overview of each of the adventures that you've done since then? So you biked across the U.S. and then what else have you done? Because there's some pretty epic ones here.
Yeah, there's some pretty silly ones as well. It's when I came back from that trip, I ended up riding about 14,000 miles on my bicycle before I ran out of money. And I expected just to come home, finished in Hong Kong, New York to Hong Kong with my trip. I'd save just enough money to fly me home from wherever I finished up. And I was expecting just to come back home and rejoin normal life. I sort of assumed that I would get this travel bug out of my system. But I guess, as you well know, and as a lot of people listening to this well know, that doesn't ever really happen. It's something that's with you forever. And I've learned what a cool thing that is. And while I was in Hong Kong, I was put in touch with a friend of a friend, actually a friend of Alistair's, who I did the Empty Quarter trip with. And this guy, Rob, who I met up with, was an adventurer. And he just happened to be planning a new journey across China. We chatted about it. I wondered if I wanted to come along. I was really into the idea. China was, at that time, seemed to me like the most fascinating country in the world. And I think it probably still is, you know, this huge country, this huge landmass, a billion people. And I think we know probably a lot about the big cities, but outside of Beijing, Shanghai, Guangzhou, Hong Kong, there's that huge empty space in the middle. And for the most part, you know, it's a bit of a mystery, certainly to me before I went. So we decided to do this trip and start walking through it. It seemed walking was a perfect way to really immerse ourselves in the country and see how culture and people and landscape change at that slow speed, the kind of ultimate slow speed of going through and exploring. So we did that, and we ended up making a TV show about that, which was great because we could then share it with an audience. So we spent 6 months walking from the Gobi Desert in Mongolia down to Hong Kong. It was about 3,000 miles. And it was tough, you know, walking that distance is tough. I think if I knew how tough it would have been, I would never have got out of bed on the first day. But it was worth it. And like all of these travel experiences are, you just love them so much afterwards. It was that trip that really turned this into a career for me, I suppose. That's when I was able to start making a living from it, because I'd made a TV show and I was writing more about my trips and just able to share the story. And that's what I became really passionate about. Was there was a lot of personal fulfillment I got from it, but I really loved the idea of being able to take these stories and that I find and share them with people to either maybe just entertain people or provide some sort of education or inspiration or just encouragement to go off and for people to have their own adventures. And that seemed a really powerful tool and a great way to do something good with these trips. So that's what I started doing. After China, I walked through the Empty Quarter Desert for 1,000 miles with Al Humphreys. I've recently come back from a trip in Iran, following the longest river in the country from source to sea for about 5 weeks, following the river Karun. I've done shorter trips all over the place. I did a fun one last summer where I went around the British Isles on a folding bicycle. So I just try and keep myself busy, do a mixture of fun things, interesting things, worthwhile things, dangerous things, all of the everything I can think of that fits into adventure.
Yeah, and one of the neat things is you did that adventure with Rob, and that was through a friend of a friend, and then you did the adventure with Al Humphreys, who we've had on the show, across the desert, and which I just figured out about 6 days ago when I thought, hey, wait, this guy walked across the desert pulling a sled as well. there can't be two trips doing this. And then I realized, oh, wait, they did it together. And then, as you just mentioned, you did the longest river in Iran with another podcast guest of ours, Tom Allen, who also has a film called Janapar. And we'll link that up if you guys are interested in listening to Al's episode or Tom's episode. But you have all these little British adventurers, right? You have a little close-knit community there, it seems.
Yeah, it's really cool. I think there's so many people around. I'm discovering now, to begin with, when I set off to cycle across America, I didn't really know anyone who was interested in this sort of thing. And a lot of my peers thought I was pretty odd to go and do it. But the more I've done these trips, the more I get in touch with people who do similar sorts of things. And there's a few people who are doing it consistently and spreading the word through blogs and so on. And people like Alistair Humphreys and Tom Allen and Rob Lowell are great examples of those. And it's just really fun to find people who share similar interests and are really talented in their areas. All of those people are great storytellers and great adventurers. And so it's just really cool to know that there's a little community like that of people who share similar passions and are up for these kind of trips.
Yeah, and that's a good lesson for anyone, whether you're an adventurer, whether you're a writer, online entrepreneur, blogger, what have you. It's finding people who don't think you're crazy and odd for doing what you're doing, connecting with them and kind of helping inspire each other to keep going, to keep pushing. And for you then, you've done some trips with partners and you've done some trips by yourself. How do the experiences compare and how do you decide which is best for a certain trip, whether you should go with someone or whether you want to do it alone?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think just to jump on something you said earlier there, I think it's cool that there's loads of people who share similar kind of passions and ideas. But in order to find them, I always think one of the best ways is just to go and do whatever it is that we as individuals like to do. Because I did ask some people to come on my first bicycle trip with me and no one wanted to. And if I'd waited around for the right people who were similarly interested, I'd probably still be sitting somewhere in an office planning my first big adventure. So the best way to find people who have similar interests is just to go and do something. And then you'll find that they'll come to you and you'll start to build that community. But the most important thing is to, you know, to get started and go and do something and you'll learn who else is into it via that method. I've really enjoyed doing trips on my own and with other people. I think I learned so much on my first journey on my own, and I'm so glad I did it that way because I was so vulnerable. I was so naive. I was so stupid much of the time, but I really needed that. I needed to just jump into the deep end and basically find it really tough for a long time. The first couple of weeks of following my dream adventure were just totally miserable. I had an awful time to begin with. And I thought, maybe this isn't for me. You know, maybe adventure is something that other people, tough guys, go and do. But it just takes that time to get used to it and to learn a bit more about it, to develop and build a bit of confidence. I think doing trips alone is great for that, but increasingly I enjoy the company. It's just more fun for one a lot of the time. It's fun to have that person to share things with and to, you know, to share a laugh with or to see a cool sight with. And for me, because I'm trying to tell stories and make films or whatever it is from the places I go, it's nice to have that creative sounding board to share ideas with and to help with the production of whatever it is I'm creating. So there's definitely a place for both types of journeys.
Yeah, and you mentioned something there where you said, maybe it's just for the tough guys, right? Maybe I'm not cut out for it. And I think a lot of people think that, and then it stops them from even starting. What type of training did you have before this? I mean, are you just a regular guy? Are you some superhuman? You know, give us a little bit of background here, because what I found, maybe this isn't true, maybe you are superhuman, but what I found is people just start doing it and that's how they toughen up to actually finish the adventure.
Yeah, for sure. I would love to be able to answer your question. I'm just superhuman, Trav, but unfortunately that's not it. I'm that person who just totally ordinary in every way, really. And I had no experience of this sort of thing. I had no special skills and I really didn't know what I was doing at all. I learned everything about going on adventures just by going on adventures. I really wasn't very fit. I wasn't very strong. When I started cycling, I could only cycle about 20 miles a day. But within a couple of weeks, my body just became accustomed to it. The human body is so adaptable physically and mentally, and it can do just about anything we set it to. And so amazingly, I was cycling 70, 80, 90 miles a day within, you know, 2-3 weeks. And I found it the same with my walking trip. So I'm far from being a tough guy or superhuman. And in fact, I don't really know any adventurers who would fit that description. All of us who do it are just normal guys and girls who start out and you build the skills as you go along, which is why I think the most important thing you can go and do is just try something and see how it goes.
Yeah, for sure. And if anyone is listening, like I said, we've had Alistair on, we've had Tom on, we've also had on Jason Lewis, another British adventurer. So if you're into this episode, you might want to go back and listen to the other three. And Jason said the same thing. He set off on what ended up being a 13-year trek around the world. And he said, I didn't do anything before it. If I would have known beforehand how hard physically it would have been, I would have trained. But you just, you know, your training comes as you do it. And like you said, that's how you learn about adventure, both physically, mentally, emotionally. You can prepare yourself maybe to a point, but that's a very small point, and then you have to go out and do it. So if someone is thinking about doing an adventure, and the cool part is, as you said, they can do it at any age, they can do it at any fitness level, you know, you really do learn it on the road. Should they just jump right in? Should they plan some kind of, what should they do beforehand?
I think it's jumping right in. I mean, planning can be great. Certain people, I've come to realize, definitely benefit from planning. And it's not so much what they actually plan. I think a certain personality type just feels better for having plans. But so much of these adventures, so many of these adventures work best when you maybe set some pragmatic boundaries in place. But once it begins, you just have to let go of it and see what happens. And that's the most important thing, is starting and then just going with it and being prepared to completely change your plan. I generally don't plan a whole lot for my trips, and sometimes that works terribly and things go awfully wrong. But, you know, that's where a lot of the adventure lies, is in that kind of space in the unknown. Sometimes I plan things and it works out well. I try not to overdo it. It's only just a little bit. Maybe if I'm going somewhere that I think might have some kind of security issues, and I haven't really done a whole lot of travel in areas like that, but I sign that sort of stuff out. That's just common sense. You know, there's no point in being really silly about it, but do the really common sense, the basics, and then just go for it. And certainly things like route planning on adventures and which way to go, I'm much prepared to turn up and ask the first person I meet and say, hey, where's interesting? What's going to be the most interesting way for me to go? And local people will know infinitely more than any guidebook.
Yeah, for sure. Where do your ideas for your adventures come from? Like, are these things that have, you know, do you have a bunch of ideas, I'm sure you do, kicking around in your head, and then you finally say, I'm going to do one? Or does something kind of spur you and say, hey, I'm going to do this, and all of a sudden, 6 weeks later or 4 weeks later, you're on something that you never envisioned, you know, a month ago?
I guess it's a mixture. When I first started out, I had a very keen idea that I wanted to go and do a big adventure, but I didn't know where it would be. And in a way, it didn't really matter. Where I knew I wanted to travel, I guess I knew how I wanted to travel. I wanted to be able to explore and see the world, and it needed to be very cheap because I was really a student still. But I also, I needed freedom to do whatever I wanted, whenever I wanted. And that kind of really narrowed things down to a bicycle. That was all I came up with. I did want to go on a motorbike initially, but I couldn't afford one. So I just ended up on a bicycle instead. And America just happened. It just seemed to be the place that interested me at the time. I'd always read the kind of grit American road trip stories, Kerouac and Steinbeck and those guys. So that's where that idea came from. And then I just kept going on my bike. But the last couple of trips I've done have been ideas from other people. Someone says to me, hey, do you want to go to Iran and follow the longest river from source to sea? And to me, that's an awesome idea. So I'm on board. All sorts of people who enjoy these type of adventures, of course, you spend so much time daydreaming about it, and opening an atlas is probably one of the most dangerous things you can do, because immediately you have 100 ideas of places you want to go and see and things you might want to do there. So my head is full of lists and my notebooks are full of lists, and it's just which one of those I have time and money and energy to go and do at any one time.
Yeah, I think we're very much alike in that idea, where I'll just start writing stuff down, all the trips I want to take or adventures I want to have. And then, you know, as some kind of fade away, some get stronger and pull you in, and then others kind of just happen haphazardly. And you're like, yep, I might as well take advantage of that. So being open to that is, I think, a really good lesson for a lot of people. You don't know exactly, you know, it's good to have your plans and to kind of say, I want to go here and eventually do it. But sometimes there's going to be a trip that comes up that you never envisioned taking, and all of a sudden you're on it. And I think that can be some of the most rewarding travels that you can do.
Yeah, totally. I totally agree. One of the great joys of traveling is meeting people who take you in, people you've never met before, locals, and also meeting other travelers. And I always love it when I meet someone who is somewhere where they never expected to be. I remember meeting a couple of people in China who had gone off to India to travel some, and then eventually realized that they just weren't enjoying it as much, and they completely changed their plans around and started cycling through China and were having the best possible time. And they told all their friends and family that they were going to India, and they booked all these tickets and all these experiences, and they just chucked it all in. And, you know, India's a great place. Some people absolutely love it there, but these guys wanted to go to China instead and just totally changed their plans. And I think that's the perfect attitude. It's if you stick to a plan just for the sake of sticking to a plan because you think you have to, then that's probably a surefire way to ruin an adventure.
Yeah, for sure. One neat thing you've been able to do is get sponsors for some of your adventures. And I know there's probably some people out there who think, all right, I've got this really cool adventure that I want to do. It hasn't been done before. Maybe there's some way that I can alleviate some of those costs in doing it. How does that process work? If you can shed a little bit of light on that.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I've never actually got funding to go and have an adventure from a sponsor. What I do get regularly is equipment for these journeys. And that started really, I didn't get too much. I got a couple of little bits and pieces from my cycling trip, but I had no background. I was just a regular guy who wanted to go off and do a cycling trip. And everyone wants to go and do a cycling trip these days. And if you're about to set off on your first ever bicycle trip and think, hey, I'd love a free bicycle and some free pannier bags and, you know, maybe a nice tent and that sort of thing, I would say it's going to be very, very hard for you to probably get that because every equipment company is having hundreds of people a day asking them for it. So the best thing to do, of course, is just go and do something. First of all, prove your worth, earn your stripes and show that you're the type of person who can go and have a great adventure and share it well and have great experiences and tell good stories and be creative. Once I'd done my first trip, then I found it much easier and I had a lot more confidence to approach equipment manufacturers and say, hey, I'm going to walk across China. I think it's this cool idea. It's reasonably unique. And I would love one of your really good quality rucksacks to take on my trip. I want something good. And that worked. You know, these companies, a lot of the time, they want to support really good ideas. And now that works really well. I work with three or four equipment manufacturers very closely and use their gear over and over again. And I think that's the best way to do it. Some people do get funding to go on journeys, but I've never really gone in for that. I prefer the method of self-funding trips because it's so cheap relatively to have an adventure. My last two trips have cost me probably about $1,600 for a 5 to 7 week adventure, including flights, on the ground costs, everything. And that's including making a film, an independent feature-length film about it as well, shooting all the footage for that. So it's reasonably cheap, and I prefer just to put the money up front myself from money that I've earned from writing about adventures and giving talks about it. And then I have no obligations. I have full control, and I can use the equipment and send photos through to these companies, but that's just a nice reciprocal relationship.
Yeah, some good life lessons in there. You know, do something before maybe going and asking for sponsorship. You know, you have, as you said, prove your worth in some way. You know, it doesn't even have to be an epic journey. Maybe you've done some other things, but make sure you're, if you are approaching companies in any way, prove your worth there. And like you said, I think too, you don't want to get caught up in ending up doing something that you don't want to do, like a sponsored trip. And they're out there for a lot of different travelers and travel bloggers and adventurers. There are all these sponsored trips, but a lot of times people come back from them feeling like, well, this isn't really what I wanted to do, or this didn't turn out how I wanted to do. So being able to have full control over it, especially like you mentioned, with trips 5 to 7 weeks, $1,600, you can easily spend more than that just staying at home. I think people need to understand that the costs are relatively low.
For sure, yeah. And I think the heart of adventure is freedom and being able to do what feels right in the moment. And for that reason, I always try and tailor the trips that I go on to allow me that, so I'm not tied in to do things because I think there's better experiences to be had by having that flexibility. And that's why I've generally avoided organized tours and things like that and just gone for it on my own. It feels so liberating. It's quite scary at times, and there's downsides, and you're on your own. But you kind of live and die, not literally, of course, but you live and die by your own decisions, really. And I love that aspect of it. You know, you're fully in control of what you're doing.
Yeah, let's talk about the new book, The Road Headed West. You just launched it a few weeks ago. You're actually on tour for it right now. So we appreciate you taking some time out to come talk on the podcast. What is it about this experience that moved you to write about it over some of the other adventures you've had? Since the basis of this story, you know, cycling across America, definitely seems a bit less exotic than pulling a sled through the desert or, you know, going down the longest river in Iran. Like, what was it about this trip that you took, your first trip, that led you to then say, I'm going to write about this one?
Yeah, I think in terms of my story and what happened to me, this was by far the biggest adventure I've ever had, because I went through so many transformations. I started out completely naive. I was really young. I knew nothing. You know, I didn't know how to pack a bicycle. I'd never been in a tent on my own before. I'd never really traveled alone. I hadn't done any of these things. And so the whole thing was just one enormous shock to the system. But what I loved about that journey across America, there was a lot of things going. I went from New York really across to Seattle and then down the coast to Mexico. And that's what's in the book. But the experiences I had in that, I think, are really a lot of people are going to be able to recognize, to kind of share in some of those experiences that I had. It's the same thing that everyone goes through when they first travel. It's those same lessons. And I think people who've traveled will read it and really it'll strike a chord with them. And people who want to travel, I think it might be quite encouraging to show that anyone can go and do this. And I quite like the fact now that I was so clueless when I first set off, because it just shows how possible it is and what happens when you take that risk. The thing I'm most proud of in life is the fact that I went and did it, because I so easily could not have. And in a lot of ways, it was a huge risk, and the sensible option was to stay at home and, you know, keep working this job and everything else. And so I'm really glad and really proud that I did that and chose adventure over stability and all the great rewards that came out of that. But on top of that, North America, I mean, even for certainly for people who live in the US and even for people in Western Europe, it's somewhere that we all feel pretty familiar with and think we know it so well. But I kind of like the challenge in that, to show the other side of it, to show the North America that we probably don't see every day. And I really found that I got that. I didn't spend much time in big cities. I spent a lot of time in the back roads, you know, the byways in between places. I went through states that don't get a lot of press. I spent a long time in, you know, the Midwest, riding through cornfields and into South Dakota. There's just so much there. It changes so much. It's so diverse. And I met so many incredible people that I had all these wonderful adventures with. And when it came to writing a book, I had all these adventures that I wanted to write about, but this one just felt, this has got the strongest story. It's something people are going to be able to empathize with. And I think it's just a really entertaining story as well. So that's kind of what encouraged me to do this one first.
Yeah, it's interesting, because everyone who has traveled, I think, has that kind of first big adventure, big travel story. And whether you go and do crazy things after that or not, for example, you know, for me, when people ask me, what was the most influential traveling I've ever done? It was probably a simple, you know, I was 18 years old and I took a road trip down to Florida with my best friend. And it was the first time we had ever done a trip on our own. And, you know, we didn't even know which way to go. As soon as we were going to get on the highway, we're like, do we go east? Do we go west? We didn't even know where to go. You know, that's a simple trip now that I've done 10, 15 times since. And I, you know, been to countries that are way more exotic and areas that are way more exotic than Florida. But to me, that just sticks in my mind as this is the first adventure, the first real traveling I did. And it changed me in a way that other traveling hasn't, because it can't, because it was the first one. And I think that's a really cool story that you tell. You know, it's just like, let's say just North America. I don't want to, you know, poo-poo it too much. Like, bicycling across America is pretty cool. But it's this coming of age, right? That we don't know what we're expecting when we get into it. We're totally green. We're totally naive. We're probably really, really stupid. And all the lessons you can learn in that just kind of come through in your book.
Yeah, for sure. And it's also just really nice to show that you don't have to go and walk across China and do a 3,000-mile trek or go down a remote river in Iran to have an adventure. You can have it really on your doorstep. You can have it, you know, right outside my door here in the UK where I am at the minute, or you can bicycle across North America. You can take something that you think you know, somewhere like your own country and just approach it in a slightly new, adventurous way. So instead of, I don't know, traveling to the places you always travel to, or by the same methods, by driving or by flying, you jump on a bicycle and you explore the back roads, and you can find somewhere that you think you know and discover that really you don't know it at all. And there's so much adventure to be had in there.
Yeah, as Alistair said in his podcast, it's the idea of micro-adventures, right? Just doing something differently, even if it's right around your hometown, your home country, whatever. Just get out, do it, grab a bike instead of your car, and you'll see that there's new ways to see the same old, right?
Yeah, exactly. The micro-adventure concept's a great one, and it's just about finding adventure everywhere you can.
Yeah. One of the things we love to do on this podcast, you know, inspire people to travel. And you've definitely done that through the book, through the stories you've told today, but also then teach them that it doesn't have to be expensive. And we've touched on this a little bit already, you know, travel more, spend less. You've done a lot of traveling in a variety of manners. What are some of the best tips you have for saving money while you're traveling, while you're on the road?
I love to travel by human power for lots of reasons, but one of them is that it's just simple. And along with the simplicity comes a very nice cost effectiveness as well. If you travel by human power, you cut out a lot of transport costs and you have more of an experience along the way. So I think it's a great idea just to get a bicycle and ride between places, or to walk or to kayak or whatever it is. But it is so cheap. But most of my journeys that I do in this way, they don't have to be really difficult and really miserable and hard. You don't have to carry loads of gear and be a real tough guy. You can do them quite easily and have a really pleasant time, but still just spend a few pounds or a few dollars a day as you do it. That's my key, really, is travel in a method that doesn't require an expensive lifestyle. Accommodation is one of the big things that costs so much, and it's great to spend some time in a city and stay in a cheap hostel. That's something I do try and do when I travel now, because you get all the social experience of a city. But the rest of the time, the best hotel I can imagine is my tent or my sleeping bag out in the field somewhere. And, you know, that cuts down on costs so much as well. So if you cut out transport costs, you cut out accommodation costs, then really you're looking at a pretty cheap trip.
Yeah, you can bring your own mints and put them on your pillow every morning, right, if you need that.
Exactly.
One of my favorite questions to ask guests on the show is about their travel mistakes or mishaps, because everyone seems to think, okay, seasoned travelers, they have it together, but the reality is much, much different than that. I'm sure you've had a couple of hilarious mishaps while you've traveled. What sticks out in your mind is one or two that really are ones that you thought, oh my gosh, I can't believe I did this, or I made this mistake, or this is happening to me?
And we've touched on it a few times already. I think in the earlier days of my traveling, and sometimes even still now, I get really focused on places that I want to go for a certain reason. And so I kind of really push myself to get there. And it's so easy to get so focused on one place or one experience that I'm heading towards that I completely forget to enjoy the other things that happen along the way. And that's something I always regret if I end up falling into that trap. You know, it's a hard thing to do, to live out all these cliches of see the moment and live there and all that sort of stuff. But it makes such a difference. And when I do manage to really just enjoy a journey for the sake of being on a journey, that's when I have the best time. And if I can let go of all those pressures that I feel to keep moving and to, you know, make distance or get somewhere else, or get somewhere cheaper or get somewhere that might be more interesting, then I just enjoy it more. So it's really just about beginning some exciting adventure and then letting it take over a little bit and following what seems to make the most sense at the time. I don't know if anyone ever really gets control over that. I still make that mistake and get pressurized, but it's a good one to aim for.
Yeah, to use another cliche, right? Stop to smell the roses, I guess, kind of.
Exactly. Yeah.
And I'm with you. That has happened to me basically every trip I've gone on. You know, there have been moments where I've stopped and I thought, you know, this is it. Like I'm really immersed. I'm really enjoying it. You know, I'm calm about it. And then I think, okay, I finally got it beaten, right? Like now I've harnessed travel. I've beaten travel. I know how to do it. And then the next day, all of a sudden something happens and we're running around to get to the next place. And, you know, a day goes by and you think, man, I didn't even really look at where I was or what I was doing. It was all go, go, go. And I do think you're right that there's no way to fully get control over it. But there are ways to say, okay, I am going to take it a little easier. I am going to kind of stop and see what's going on as opposed to making distance or getting to the next place or ticking another country off your box or all that type of stuff.
Yeah, I agree entirely. I think another thing that I have learned, a mistake that I made quite a lot to begin with, was that I didn't really have a priority in terms of the equipment that I would bring on these trips. I would try and get the best version of things that I could, but often I didn't have a lot of money, so I would just end up with a real mixture of some good stuff and some bad stuff. But I realized now that there's certain things that I really enjoy having quality versions of. If I'm walking, I love to have really comfortable boots. I don't really mind so much if I have a pretty rubbish raincoat, because I can just use a garbage bag, a bin bag, and use that to keep me dry instead. But if I have rubbish footwear, then I get blisters and I'm miserable all the time. So I now have a mental priority list of things. And if I have a comfortable rucksack and some good boots, and really those are the two main things. I also like to have a Kindle so I can read as well. That's my kind of third luxury. Those three things on any walking trip are things I love. And everything else, if it's great, brilliant. But if it's not, it doesn't really matter so much. And working out what's important to us individually is so key to enjoying travel.
Yeah, I agree 100% with that. We've just done a podcast, my wife and I, about packing, and I'm someone who's very frugal, but there comes a point where, you know, if you want to do something the right way, you splurge on a few items, and then you fill in the gaps everywhere else. And, you know, if you don't have the best of something, or you don't even bring something with you, you're probably going to find you don't need it. And if you do, you can get it along the way. So I agree, whether it's an adventure type trek or whether just a regular trip, you know, look at the things that you really need to be comfortable and that you really enjoy, get a few very nice items or just acceptable items. And then, you know, don't worry about bringing all the rest of the stuff that you haven't worn for 5 months at your own house, or, you know, going and buying a new raincoat because, you know, you've never even had a new raincoat, but you're going on an adventure. That's probably not needed. You can fill in the gaps. I think that's cool advice. And that's fascinating to hear from your end as an adventurer. And then from the end also of, oh, just a regular type traveler.
Yeah, and tied into all that, I guess, is the idea of just packing light in general. There's nothing worse than having too much stuff, because that kind of mindset feeds into everything, and you always feel weighed down and overloaded and stressed out about having a heavy backpack. So, you know, getting rid of stuff is so much better than bringing more stuff.
Yeah, it's the physical weight and the mental weight of bringing too much stuff, and you have a really cool picture on your site of, you know, what you started with when you went from New York in the beginning and how overloaded you were, and then kind of how stuff just whittled its way down to then at the end of the trip having much, much less stuff. So if people want to see that, we'll link that up. But I couldn't agree more with packing light is going to be the key to a lot of travels. It's really going to free you up to do what you want. Leon, thanks so much for coming on the show. Your story in the Road Headed West and then all the subsequent adventures you've had are truly inspirational. Before I let you go, remind people how they can come connect with you. And of course, what's the best way for people to grab a copy of your book, The Road Headed West?
Sure. I'm on all of the normal social media things that I spend far too much time wasting my days on. Twitter and Facebook and is Leon McCarron, just my name. And my website is leonmccarron.com, which is where I blog and put all the updates, and that's where people can get a copy of my book and of my films, is via leonmccarron.com. There's links to get the book on there. The book's also available on Amazon and all good bookstores and all the other places that you might want to get it, but my website's the hub for most stuff.
And you have the book, and you also then have, do you have one or two DVDs of some of the other adventures that you've taken?
At the minute, I've got two. I've got the National Geographic TV series about walking across China, and then the independent film we made about trekking through the empty border desert with the big, silly part.
So very cool. So you can read about your first adventure. You can watch then, if you're into that kind of thing, for some of the subsequent adventures. Leon, thanks again for coming on. I look forward to finish up my copy of The Road Headed West in the next few days.
Cool. Thanks for having me on. It's really fun to chat adventure.
My pleasure. Hey guys, if you love what you heard from Leon today, don't forget to head on over to his website, leonmccarron.com, to find out more about all his amazing, awesome adventures. You can also pick up a copy of his new book, which I highly recommend. It's one of the best travel books I've read in a long time, The Road Headed West. If you get it from Leon's website, he'll make a little bit more money off the sale, and we always love supporting guests here at Extra Pack of Peanuts. So if you want the book, that's one way to do it. You can also get it, though, from Amazon.com or a lot of the bookstores in the area. Now, if you're listening to this and you just want more British adventurer knowledge and more interviews with British adventurers, luckily, we've got three more of them that have come on the Extra Pack of Peanuts podcast before. We've had Jason Lewis, who was first person to circumnavigate around the globe using only human power. An amazing, amazing story on episode 4. We have Tom Allen, who went on an epic bike ride himself on episode 15. And we just had Alistair Humphreys, who's done a ton of different adventures and was named National Geographic Adventurer of the Year in 2013 on episode 43. So if you want to get your British adventurer fix, you can listen to some of those episodes. They are all linked up on the podcast show notes. You can get all the show notes or see all of the other shows that we've done at extrapackofpeanuts.com/pods. That's extrapackofpeanuts.com/PODS. You can also find the show notes for this show, episode 50, there as well. So if we talked about something on the show and you want to figure out where to find it, you can go to extrapackofpeanuts.com/pods, episode 50, and we'll link up everything that we talked about here with Leon. Don't forget, we're also looking for enough reviews on iTunes to catch Tim Ferriss's podcast, and we need your help. If you take 1 minute to go leave us a review on iTunes, we really, really appreciate it, and it will also help this show grow and get in the hands of other people who want to be inspired to travel. If you don't know how to leave a review on iTunes, don't worry. We've got you covered. You can head on over to extrapackofpeanuts.com/likebefore, P-O-D-S, pods, and check out our super short video tutorial. Thanks for all the love, everyone. You rock, and until next week, happy free travels.